First, thanks for having me here at Perimeter Institute and at this seminar. So yeah, today we'll be talking about the braid group, ASCII-Wilson algebra, and centralizers of UQSL2. These are recurrent topics in my research, so I'll try to give a general picture, and then I'll go more specifically to the problem we were trying to solve. So this will be based on joint work with some French collaborators, Nicolas Crampé, Loïc Poulin-Dandessy, and my advisor at Montreal, Luc Vinet. Okay, so the heart of the problem is really, it comes from the Chauval duality. So let me just recall a little bit this very fundamental result in representation theory. So we start with a vector space. I will always work on complex numbers. So let's take Cn, finite dimension n. And we take its k-fold tensor product. Then we can act on it with two very natural ways. We can act with matrices. So let's say matrices in a Lie algebra, so either GLN. I will take SLN here. And so naturally, we will act on the tensor product by using the diagonal action, which is like this, and it preserves the Lie algebra structure. Another natural way to act on it is using the So just to say that this diagonal action of the Lie algebra can be extended to the universal enveloping algebra. And then we can also act with the symmetry group algebra by naturally permuting the factors of the tensor product. So here I have written the action of the generators that I will denote sigma I, which are transpositions and permute Vi with Vi plus 1. So we have this picture here. We have two representations, one of USLN and one of CSK on this space of endomorphisms. And the Chauval duality says that the images of USLN and CSK in this space of endomorphisms are full mutual centralizers. So the image of CSK will be the centralizer of USLN, and the image of USLN will be the centralizer of CSK. And here's the definition of the centralizers. It's the set of all endomorphisms that commute with the action of USLN in the first case and symmetric group algebra in the second case. And also another result of Chauval duality is that we have some decomposition of the vector space Cn tensor K. So it's a direct sum of representations. So CSK irep tensor a USLN irep. The sum is taken over Young diagrams that are denoted partitions of K with here at most n rows. And here's something interesting that we can see is that if we decide to act with the identity, for instance, in the symmetric group algebra, then the dimension of this irreducible representation will give the degeneracy of the USLN ireps V lambda, which appear in this decomposition, and vice versa, of course. Okay, so there have been different versions of Chauval duality that have been obtained since that classical version. So we can change the Lie algebra. Sorry, it doesn't work anymore. Okay, we can change the Lie algebra we're working with, so we can look at SON, SPN, for instance, and then we get a duality with the so-called Brouwer algebra. We can quantize things, so we can look at the quantum group, UQSLN, and then we will get a duality with the Hecker algebra, which is a deformation of the symmetric group algebra. We can also deform SON and SPN, so look at the quantum groups UQSON, UQSPN, and then we get the Biermann-Murakami-Wenzel algebra, which is a deformation of Brouwer algebra. So I will focus on UQSLN. And so we have this picture with UQSLN and the Hecker algebra. But here, an important remark that I want to emphasize is that the map phi, which represents the Hecker algebra, it is surjective on the centralizer, but it is not injective in general. So in particular, the centralizer of UQSLN will be isomorphic to the Hecker algebra if and only if the number k of tensor factors is less or equal to the dimension n of the vector space. And if not, then we have to quotient the Hecker algebra by some q anti-symmetrizer on n plus 1 points. And we can also understand it in the classical case, looking at the decomposition of the vector space, because only Young diagrams with at most n rows would appear in the in the direct sum. And it's because of this thing here.
Yeah. I'm getting a bit confused about SLF versus GLM.
Yeah, it's the same result will hold for the two. So, because I think it's related to the center.
You think they were decentralized of each other. Why aren't the E1 transformations also commuting with permutations?
Yeah.
It's just central character. It's just as constant. It's the same charge. The central character for GLM is just acting up by some function in NMK.
But that's what we can try.
No, the image of EQSLN contains the scalars and the central character.
Ah, the image, got it. Thank you.
Yeah, so the image is the same for the
two. Gotcha.
Okay, so in the case where we take UQSL2, for instance, then the quotient will be the temporal Lilib algebra. The centralizer will be precisely the temporal Lilib algebra. Okay. So now the question we can ask is what happens if we choose different representations? So I will take UQSL2. We know it has irreducible representation, finite dimension. So we will denote them 2s plus 1, the dimension, where s is the spin. We can also talk about highest weight modules. So we can consider a tensor product of any irreducible representation with some dimensions of spins s1, s2, up to sk. So let's look at some examples. So I already said that if we choose all identical copies with spin 1/2, which is the standard representation of SL2, UQSL2, then we get the temporal Lilib algebra. Then if we choose spin ones, this has been studied, and it turns out that we get that the centralizer is a quotient of the BMW algebra. And then the kernel has also been studied by Lehrer and Zhang, and it is non-trivial if k is larger than 3. In general, if we take k identical copies of spin S, we will get that the centralizer is a quotient of the braid group algebra on k strands. But the kernel is, a precise description of the kernel is not known in general. Something else we can say is that if we take three factors in the tensor product, but with any spins, then we get something that it will be a quotient of the Askey-Wilson algebra. It's a proof in some paper of Lehrer and Zhang. For UQSL2, it's proved. It's not obvious. Okay, so here we have this quotient of the Askey-Wilson algebra, which comes in a very different context of orthogonal polynomials. And I will explain this more in a few slides. And for the kernel, well, we have studied that with some collaborators, and we have arrived at best at a conjecture, which has been proved in some examples, but in general, we weren't able to prove it. So in particular, if you look at these examples, we can see that if we take three copies with identical spin S, but any spin, then the centralizer will be both a quotient of the braid group algebra and of this Askey-Wilson algebra. So now let me give a little bit more background on these two important algebras, the braid group algebra and the Askey-Wilson. So let's start with the braid group. So the braid group has some invertible generators. I will denote them sigma I. They commute if I and j are far enough, but if they are adjacent, then they satisfy the braid relation. So this algebra has a diagrammatic counterpart, which is equivalent. So we can represent the generators by some braids like here, so crossings of the strands I and I plus 1, and we have k strands. It has many important applications. So because of this diagrammatic representation, it has applications in knot theory for link invariants and any theory that computes link invariants, such as topological QFT. It admits Young-Baxter operator representations. So basically, the braid generators are mapped into R matrices, Ri, I plus 1. And because of this, it has applications in physics in integrable systems and, for instance, in statistical mechanics. The R matrix often will come from a quantum group, so that's the relation with UQSLN. And so, as I said, the conclusion is that we have a surjective map from the braid group algebra to this centralizer that we would like to describe. So let me show you a little bit the quotients of the braid group that are that appear in this centralizer story. So the first one at the top is the braid group, it's the braid relation, but if we add a quadratic relation to it, then we get the Hecker algebra, which was the centralizer for UQSLN with a fundamental representation. And then if we add some other relation, so this one can be really presented in several ways. This way is the typical temporal leap presentation using some idempotents. So if we add this additional relation here, we get the temporal leap algebra. So we could also add instead quotient by a characteristic relation of degree 3. And if we add, moreover, some other relations that I have written here, we get the BMW algebra. So these are all centralizer algebras, but so the first one for spin 1/2, the BMW for spin 1. And for higher spins, we expect to have some quotient that would be similar, but we don't have, for now, we don't know exactly how it will be, and that's why we will use the Askew-Wilson algebra.
So are you always assuming your Q is generic?
Yeah, Q is generic. Okay, so now let me introduce to you the Askew-Wilson algebra. So as I said, it comes from an orthogonal polynomial context. The Askew-Wilson polynomials are some Q-hypergeometric orthogonal polynomials, so they can be expressed in terms of basic hypergeometric series. They have a discrete version, which are called the Kuraka polynomials. So the Askew-Wilson are orthogonal with respect to a continuous measure, but the Kuraka polynomials, we can truncate them and obtain the Kuraka polynomials, which are discrete. And both of them sit at the top of the so-called Q-Ask scheme. So this is a scheme that somehow classifies classical orthogonal polynomials. And being on top means that any of these polynomials can be obtained as a limit or a specialization of the Askew-Wilson polynomials. So these polynomials have some bispectral properties. They satisfy a recurrence and a Q-difference relation. And from these relations, we can obtain some operators that satisfy the Askew-Wilson algebra. It was introduced by Zhdanov. So here I wrote some typical three-term recurrence relation here on top and Q-difference relation. So in the recurrence relation, we multiply the polynomial by the variable and get a three-term recurrence relation, so Pn plus 1, Pn, Pn minus 1. And the difference relation will be dual, so the role of the variable and the degree n will be changed. And using these two equations, we can define operators acting on a space of polynomials, and we can compute their relations. This is how we find the Askew-Wilson algebra. So this algebra is related in general to tridiagonal operators. It has applications in algebraic combinatorics. In physics, I can mention that it has applications also in integrable systems, ASEP models, superintegrable models. And of more interest with the story that I am telling you today is what is the relation with the centralizers. So it's given by it starts with the Raka problem of UQSL2. So the Raka problem consists of taking three spins of representations of UQSL2 and recoupling them in different ways. So we could start by recoupling the first two spins, J1 and J2, and then add the third one. We could start with J2 and J3 and then add J1. Both of these ways of recoupling should be equivalent, so there is a change of basis going from one to the other. And the change of basis coefficients are Q-Raka polynomials. So the algebraic reason for this is that, yeah, so these are also called Raka coefficients or 6J symbols. And the algebraic reason for this is that the Askew-Wilson algebra is realized as the diagonal centralizer of UQSL2 in its threefold tensor product. So this is really at the universal level before we represent it. And the idea is that the generators of the Askew-Wilson algebra are mapped into intermediate Casimir elements. Okay. So the conclusion here is, again, that there is a surjective map from the Askew-Wilson algebra to this centralizer of UQSL2, because if it was, so we had some homomorphism in the universal level, and then we can choose some representations, but we can choose any spin representations, and we can prove the surjectivity, so we have this result here. So now I will just show you a little bit more what this algebra looks like, but I will consider a special case where we take three identical spins. So the Askew-Wilson algebra is generated by three elements, let's say ABC and some central element kappa. And the relations say that if we take the Q commutator, so the Q commutator is defined here, if we take Q to 1, it becomes the usual commutator. So if we take these Q commutators here, this element is central, this one is also central, this one is also central. And in this special case where we have identical spins, they are all equal to the same central element in the algebra. We can also find a central element that I will call omega, which is also called a Casimir element of the Askew-Wilson algebra, and which is a polynomial in the generators A, B, C, and kappa. It looks like this. It is of degree 3, and it commutes with everything in the algebra. So this central element will be important because we define the special Askew-Wilson algebra by taking a quotient and imposing this relation between this Casimir element of AW and the central element kappa and this constant chi s. Sorry? I don't know about that. Okay, so here is the picture that we have now. So we have decentralizers that we want to describe. So maybe I didn't mention it, but I am denoting the centralizer of UQSL2 with three identical spin S representations by the ZS. And here we have this, some of these centralizers. So on one side, we know that the centralizer will be a quotient of the braid group algebra. So we know in particular the temporally Lieb algebra, which is spin 1/2, BMW, which is spin 1. But more than that, we don't really know how to quotient the braid group in order to get the centralizer. On the other side, we have this Askew-Wilson algebra. I told you that we have some conjecture of a quotient. We have proved it in particular for these cases here. But more than that, it's hard to say that, to prove that this is really the centralizer. And also something on the side of the Askew-Wilson algebra is that we don't see very well how the braid relation would come in this quotient, whether here we have it directly from the start.
Okay. This polytope, this decentralizer, the diagonal centralizer of any number of UQs is going to be the quantized character variety with the number plus one. And for a sphere, the number plus one functors.
Twice that number. It's like three multiplies coming in, three going in, so it's sphere.
No, I think, because you can have it as the component of a bunch of UQs as a character variety which has one irregular singularity and a bunch of regular ones. Mm-hmm. And then taking the centralizer of the diagonal is like just looking at sort of elements that commute with the stock matrices at infinity. And I think that means you can sort of factor out the irregular singularity. And plus one regular factors in the sphere. And the other one whose line was the quantization of the character variety for four functions, essentially.
Okay.
So if A, B, and C are absolutely the traces of holonomies on the obvious functions.
General, to sort of algebra,
Okay, so the objective of this for us was to find an explicit algebraic description of the centralizer for any spin S by combining the Braid group algebra with the Askew-Wilson algebra relations. So this was the objective, and by doing this, we would have really an apparent quotient of both the Braid group and the Askew-Wilson algebra, and we know that it should be the case. So now I'm going to explain more precisely how we can do this. So let's start by looking at the centralizers of UQSL2. So okay. So I will always suppose that Q is not a root of unity. As I said, we have some spin irreducible representations that from now on I will call Vs of dimension 2s plus 1. And we can represent UQSL2 in this on this vector space. It's concretely 2s plus 1 by 2s plus 1 matrices. And to act on tensor products, we use the coproduct, which is a homomorphism from UQSL2 to its twofold tensor product, and then we can represent each factor. And so this, in this way, we can get a representation of UQSL2 on the threefold tensor product. So the question is to find all the elements that in this space of endomorphism that commute with the action of UQSL2. This will be the centralizer. So let's look at the twofold tensor product. We know how it decomposes for UQSL2. It will simply be a direct sum of spinny reps with.
The question is about the blue slide?
Yeah.
So does it matter that S is an integer?
It has to be a integer of half integer.
But I could have like the same problem in terms of the central quotient of UQ, such. I'm saying I take a test of color of 100% of central quotient.
You're killing a lot more stuff
than you can find in control. That's the same problem. Do you ever need to talk about representations here? You could just talk about endomorphisms.
Something.
So we know how it decomposes, the twofold tensor product. We get some spins from 0 to 2s. Okay, and so an example, if we take 2 spin 1 half, we get spin 0 and spin 1. And concretely, what this means is that there is a basis such that an element of UQSLS will be represented in block diagonal form with a block of dimension 1 and a block of dimension 3 corresponding to these irreducible representations. And at this point, we can define the projector on each of these irreducible representations, VR, that I will denote by ER. Okay, then the threefold tensor product, we get something similar, but now we get some degeneracies. Okay, and the spin goes from some minimum, which is either 0 or 1 half, up to 3s. And again, an example with spin 1 half, we get, for instance, here two copies of spin 1 half and one copy of spin 3 half. So we have this decomposition here. And we can compute the dimension of the centralizer using these degeneracies. So the idea is because, we saw the idea at the beginning, because if we take the identity for the centralizer, we get the dimension of the irrep of the centralizer, which is the degeneracy of the associated irrep for the spin. So here we have done the computation, and it looks like this for 3-spin S. Okay, so now we can talk about the R matrix. So we know that there is a universal R matrix in UQSL2, tensor UQSL2. From this universal R matrix, by representing it, we can construct the braided R matrix. So we also have to add some permutation on it, which will act on VS tensor VS. And this R check matrix commutes with the action of UQSL2. So this comes from the quantum group theory, because the universal R matrix somehow makes this possible. So it exchanges the tensor products, and it commutes with the coproduct. So we have here this decomposition for the representation of the braided R matrix. So if you remember, we had on each irreducible space of the decomposition, the R matrix will act as something proportional to the identity because of Schur's lemma. And so it will decompose like this with some eigenvalues QR on each irrep. And we can also write it in terms of these projectors ER. So then we can define R-check 1-2 and R-check 2-3 by taking the identity either on the third or the first tensor factor. And this will also clearly commute with the action of UQSL2 on the threefold tensor product. In fact, it has been proven that these R matrices generate the centralizer. So and they satisfy the so-called braided Young-Baxter equation, which is really the braid relation for these matrices. And so we have a starting point for the description of the centralizer. We start with the braid relation, so we have the braid group on three strands, and we add some characteristic equation of degree 2s because of the fact that the matrix has 2s eigenvalues, and so it will satisfy an equation like this, the R matrix, I mean. So this here we are trying to make it into an abstract algebra such that it will be isomorphic to the centralizer. And then when we have this characteristic equation, we can define the algebraic counterparts of the idempotents using this kind of product here. Once we have done that, we can express the sigmas in terms as a linear combination of these idempotents with eigenvalues QR, which were the eigenvalues of the R matrix. So now we can talk about some other elements that belong to the centralizer and which are intermediate Casimir elements. So there is a Casimir element in UQSL2. It will act on an irreducible representation as proportional to the identity with here, according to the normalizations that we have chosen, it will act as chi s times the identity on each irrep. And so then we can find its action on the twofold tensor product, taking the coproduct. And this, so we will denote this matrix by C. This will commute with the action of UQSL2 on VS tensor VS because it's a homomorphism. And so again, we can decompose it like this into in block diagonal form with eigenvalues chi r. And R is the spin which goes from 0 to 2s, or again, in terms of these projectors, ER. So then we can define the intermediate Casimir elements by taking the identity on the third factor or first factor, and we get C12 and C23. These also generate the centralizer. We can also define a third intermediate Casimir element, C13, but it's not really trivial how to define it. We have to use the R matrix. So we have to conjugate C23 or C12 by some R matrices. And then we also define the total Casimir element, which is the representation of the Casimir element of UQSL2 into the threefold tensor product. So the thing that has been shown in the literature is that these three elements, so C12, C23, C13, together with C13, 1, 2, 3, satisfy the special Askey-Wilson relations. And it was not really, so it was our work to show that C13, defined in terms of R matrices, really belongs also to this triplet of Askey-Wilson generators. But it makes a connection between these Casimir elements and the R matrix. And so for instance, we have this relation between the intermediate Casimir elements, and we have three others also. So now we are ready to continue taking a quotient. So we had the braid relation, the characteristic equation, and now we want to add the Askey-Wilson algebra. So we will define the elements GI as a sum over the idempotents EI with the eigenvalues corresponding to those of the Casimir elements. And then, well, we will impose the Askey-Wilson relations for this triplet, so G1, G2, and this conjugation of G2 by sigma 1. Okay, And then, so we called this, at this moment, we will call it the Askew-Wilson braid relay algebra. And then we add also a quotient, so we want to impose the special Askew-Wilson relation. So we will impose that the central element omega, corresponding to this triplet, will be equal to this central element. And then we need a final quotient to really get the centralizer. This one is a little bit more mysterious, and we really could not get rid of it. At least we cannot prove it in general, so we had to add it. And it consists of imposing this relation, so G2 taken in sandwich between the trivial idempotence E1, 0, and E1, 0, has to be proportional to E1, 0. And the claim is that at this now, after this quotient, the algebra that I will call, that I am calling AS here, is exactly the centralizer. So some remarks here. We have that this algebra AS is generated either by the sigmas or the G1, G2, or the projectors E1, E2. We have a characteristic equation for the GIs. It can be shown using the relations. And this characteristic equation corresponds to the characteristic equation that the intermediate Casimir elements would satisfy. And also this final relation that we added can be in fact written in a different way, and it says that the central element kappa, which represents the total Casimir C123, acting on the trivial idempotent, will be equal to this constant chi s times the idempotent. And it can really be understood well using what we know about the representation theory of UQSL2. So I hope I convinced you that this algebra AS has been constructed in such a way that we have a homomorphism with the centralizer. And so the homomorphism is naturally to send the sigmas to the R matrices, the GIs to the intermediate Casimir elements, kappa to the total Casimir element, and these idempotents to the projectors. It is surjective because of what we know of the R matrices or the intermediate Casimir elements. And so we have that the dimension of this algebra is greater or equal to the dimension of the centralizer. And so now it remains to show that it is injective. And this is really the complicated part. We have to show that there are no other relations that are required in order to describe the centralizer. And a typical method for proving this is to show that the dimension of the algebra is less or equal to the dimension of the centralizer. So this is where the hard work really comes. So I don't know if I have much time to explain this. We can look at the idea of how we find that it is injective. So the idea will be to find a spanning set for the algebra AS, which will have the right cardinality, that is the dimension of the centralizer. And I told you that we know precisely what is the dimension of this centralizer. And once we find a spanning set with the right cardinality, we will get a basis for the centralizer. So here is the outline. We start from something we know about the Askew-Wilson algebra, which is that it has a PBW basis. So we have a basis in terms of the intermediate Casimir element. Here it will be G1, G2, and the third one, which is a conjugation of G1 or G2. And also this central element kappa. But at this point, we only know that the powers that appear here, so A, B, C, and P, will be some integers. But we cannot say at this point that it is finite. Using the characteristic polynomials of G1 and G2, we can reduce the set of here integers that appear for G1, G2, and here also this conjugation of G1. And then we can work a little bit with, so instead of using the G1 here, we can use the idempotents because they also generate the algebra. Here G2 we can, G2 sigma 2 inverse, we can write it in terms of powers of G2. And again, G1, we can use the idempotence E1 instead. So, and we can get rid of the sigma 2 because it is an invertible element. So we get this spanning set for now. We have reduced it. Using the Askey-Wilson algebra relations, we have some really nice implications that come from the algebra. For instance, we have that if we sandwich the element G2 between two idempotents E1A and E1C, it will be zero if the difference between A and C, absolute value, is larger than B. So this comes from the framework of tridiagonal operators in general. And so here we can again reduce our set because B now will be has to be greater or equal to A minus C and smaller or equal to 2S. And then using the special Askey-Wilson relations, we can also get some nice implications because we have these kind of relations. So here it says that if we add some, so B has to start at absolute value of A minus C, and then we can add integers up to 2S. But here we have that this thing here can be re-expressed in terms of here a polynomial of kappa. I am not giving exactly how is this polynomial. And here we have gotten rid of the plus N in the G2. And so we can reduce again the spanning set for B here. And finally, using the practically all the relations and the special Askey-Wilson relation, and the final one that we added, we finally arrive at this kind of relation here for kappa, the total Casimir element, which really says, gives information about the characteristic equation that the total Casimir satisfies in the centralizer. So that's why we know it's true in the centralizer. And this allows to reduce the set of integers p in our spanning set. It is bounded by some integer n, which depends on a and c that I'm not giving explicitly here, but it is bounded. And we can really say, but by looking at this set here, at this, we can count it and say that the cardinality is precisely the dimension of the centralizer. And so we can conclude that they are isomorphic. So we have a presentation of the centralizer for any spin S, but only three strands. So I'm ready to conclude. So as I said, the goal of this was to get an algebraic description of the centralizer of UQSL2 for three factors in the tensor product of spin S, but for any spin S. And the idea was to combine both this braid group algebra and Askey-Wilson algebra. Some perspectives. Of course, it would be really nice to have the general picture with n strands for the braid group and the tensor product. But it gets more complicated because at the side of the Askey-Wilson algebra, we need something that is called the higher rank Askey-Wilson algebra, which can be defined using centralizers of UQ, diagonal centralizers of UQSL2 in its n-fold tensor product. But it's still not that clear how to define it right now, and it is related to some multivariate polynomials, but this is still a work in progress, so that we cannot yet go into a higher rank, into the higher rank case, but it would be really nice if at some point we can do that. And some other question is that I always consider Q to not be a root of unity, but might be interesting to look at what happens at those roots of unity, because then the representation theory of UQSL2 is different. More generally, well, this topic, I think, has some other nice applications. So the Askey-Wilson algebra and its connection with the centralizers, we have a bridge between two worlds, and in particular, we can look at the Askey-Wilson algebra if it is when it is we can study it in the context of theories that are usually studied for the braid group. So for instance, we can study the Askew-Wilson algebra in connection with link invariants because of all this connection with the centralizers. And there are also, we can study the connection between the braid group representations and these Askew-Wilson polynomials. So yeah, I think it's nice to have a bridge between these two worlds. I think that's all I had to say. Thank you for your attention.
All right, are there any questions?
Yeah, maybe I can rephrase this question. So so Duke and embedded it into one torus algebra of two computed variables. And this is a quite convenient way to construct infinite dimensional representations of the central character. And in principle, you can like also construct them the product in this case. So you take three copies of a quantum torus algebra, and then you can like R matrix can present it as a quantum like product of some quantum logarithms. And in principle, it's believed that like the only universal relation which is satisfied by quantum logarithm is pentagonic, like pentagonic wave. There is a like, product of three and product of. So in principle, by embedding in this way into the SO2, you can try to, using pentagonal equation, you can like get all the universal relations which do not depend on S. And then by specializing the special S, you can try to like find which additional relations on one of the logarithms appear, and therefore you will get kind of universal algebra for general S. And then by specializations, you can try to get like for special, going for finite dimensional representations. I said something, but did you hear at the beginning of the story that there is a way to embed Q of SO2 into quantum torus algebra to generate SO2?
I don't really know this side of the
story.
Okay,
it's not so.
And the temperature you leave, you have like the Joel Spenzel projectors, and that allows us to kind of get a picture of what the temporary algebra looks like the, we have these diagrams, right? So I was wondering if you have like some analogs of these projectors of like these higher spin things. Try to draw diagrams that correspond to these kind of spin strands, like maybe because you do have like very fixed quotients, right? So
yeah.
I assume that's possible.
It could, yeah. But I have not really tried it. But in principle, I guess it could, yeah.
I mean, like the you're using the projector.
Yeah, I was using projectors.
The transaxle projectors, right? That's what this thing is.
Right, yeah. As you like, get a picture of what it looks like pictorially.
It'll be a generic. There's a general question you can ask. I haven't got the variety with the regular puncture, general parameter. You can specialize it to an integer, and the quantized character variety should have a big kernel. Quotient weight with something depends on if it's S and which here will be something you do to the AWN to get the specialization to S between S. But it must be somehow local around the parameter. So yeah, I feel like there should be something you can do just one spin at a time universally to here. I like the effects because you know this operation of making the spin from generic to special is like the bit have a certain iterative column a theory and then there is a simpler theory and universe. So mixing of the bigger theory into the smaller theory with vortices and slight defects. You can probably do some BFN constructions, iterative BFN constructions here to answer some of these questions. I mean, there are theories whose geometrical environments lead to other AWM. There are just some issue gauge theory, a bunch of issue gauge fields. So,
which the gauge group is SU2?
There are a bunch of issue choose, yeah. Coupled to multiplets in that. I mean, to say it. Just take a linear quiver you choose, for example, with my fundamental master, and then you just put only one flavor at the very bottom, and put the U1 there. It's like 2-2-2-2-2-1. The catalytical branch of that theory is AWS, I think. Is the component of one of your queues, central portion of your queues. And then if you do something to the last node, you can get the queue just choo 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 choo.